Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
Welcome to this week's edition of Says You. Let's start right off with a sample question. To whom might the following clues refer?
He could not tell a lie.
He chopped down cherry trees.
He
owned the first Howard Johnson.
Stop me.
He got out of jury duty. I'm not sure.
Right, he married Martha Washington.
He started Junior Achievement.
Today we hope to expand our market, to brand our programming, to make new forays into marketing.
We should sell hats and T-shirts.
Yes, we should.
Yeah. Coffee mugs. Yeah,
right. We should have, you know, dribble glasses or something.
Yeah. You know.
Who needs a dribble glass at this age? You know.
Now.
You know, that's playing to a smaller house every year. You know that.
Oh, yeah.
It's a memorable show with some unforgettable moments. And it's next.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. In southern Afghanistan, four American service members killed today and a number of others wounded when Afghan policemen opened fire on them. The attack happened near the Pakistani border, as NPR's Soraya Sarhadi-Nelson reports from Kabul.
The American troops were on a pre-dawn patrol in the southern province of Zabul. Officials say they were separated by a few hundred feet from what they thought were friendly forces when several Afghan policemen opened fire. One shooter was killed and five are said to be at large. An Afghan police official in Zabul claims it was only one Afghan policeman who opened fire. He says the Americans had gone to the aid of 15 Afghan policemen at a checkpoint who were facing a, quote, security threat. The NATO-led coalition and Afghan officials in the province say they are investigating the incident. The American deaths bring to at least 51 the number of international troops killed in so-called insider attacks this year. Coalition troops are now required to carry loaded weapons at all times because of the increased threat from Afghan forces. Soraya Sarhadi-Nelson, NPR News, Kabul.
Also in Afghanistan, NATO is investigating whether one of its airstrikes killed civilians. Provincial officials in eastern Afghanistan say 8 women and girls were killed in a strike before dawn today. NATO says initial reports showed only a large number of insurgents dead. The top commander in Iran's powerful Revolutionary Guard is issuing a warning today. General Mohammad Ali Jafari, speaking in Farsi at a news conference in Tehran today, he warned that nothing will remain of Israel if it takes military action against Iran over its controversial nuclear program. Iran says its program is for peaceful purposes. Israel's prime minister, meanwhile, says Iran's leadership is too fanatical for diplomacy or sanctions to be effective in containing Iran's nuclear program. Benjamin Netanyahu spoke to NBC's Meet the Press. In an interview being aired today, he says Iran is dangerously close to acquiring an atomic weapon. Egyptian security forces trying to tamp down on militant activity in the remote Sinai Desert. Kimberly Adams reports from Cairo on clashes between the militants and government forces this morning.
The Egyptian government has an ongoing campaign to control armed groups in the Sinai. On Sunday morning, security forces clashed with a group of armed assailants while chasing them from the area of Sheikh Zuwaid to near the town of El Arish, according to state media. Groups of gunmen exchanged fire with military and police, resulting in injuries of 5 security personnel and 2 civilians, a young girl and an elderly woman who were passing by. 8 people were arrested. It's the beginning of the school week here in Egypt, and local schools in Sheikh Zuwaid had to be evacuated due to the intensity of the clashes. This is the latest of dozens of conflicts between Egyptian security and armed groups in the Sinai.
Kimberly Adams reporting from Cairo. You're listening to NPR News. Union teachers in Chicago could decide today whether to suspend their week-long walkout. They're meeting this afternoon to review a proposed contract. Linda Lutton of member station WBEZ in Chicago has been following the negotiations, and she was at this weekend's rally at Chicago's Union Park.
I got the sense both from the leadership at the podium and from regular rank-and-file teachers that they really want to wait and see the exact contract language. Teachers have not been given a framework. They have not even been given a summary yet of what's in this broad framework that the two sides have some agreement over. So it's really wait and see. The union officials made it very clear that the teachers' union is officially still on strike.
Linda Lutton of member station WBEZ in Chicago. More than 25,000 teachers walked off the job last week for the first time in years. Activists in New York City are marking the first anniversary of Occupy Wall Street. As NPR's Joel Rose reports, there are activities lasting into tomorrow.
It's been a year since dozens of protesters took up residence in a park a few blocks from the New York Stock Exchange. By the time police kicked them out last November, the Occupy Wall Street movement had drawn the nation's attention, at least briefly, to issues of economic inequality. Now, Occupy organizers are hoping to recapture some of that lost momentum ahead of the one-year anniversary on Monday. They're planning a slate of training events and a concert this weekend in Lower Manhattan, culminating with a sit-in on Monday morning outside the Stock Exchange. Another round of clashes with the New York Police Department may also be on the agenda. Joel Rose, NPR News, New York.
And I'm Giles Snyder, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Walmart, where forever postage stamps are sold at the register 7 days a week. Walmart sells forever postage stamps.
Welcome to Says You, a game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy.
Support for Says You in San Francisco comes from the good folks at KQED FM. And the Intercontinental Hotels, the Intercontinental Mark Hopkins, and the Intercontinental San Francisco are home away from home on the Bay and on the web at intercontinentalsanfrancisco.com.
Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Schur.
Thank you. From the Can Bar Theater at the Friends Center for the Arts in San Francisco, California, welcome to Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. He's a legend in public radio and has been since days of yore, Tony Khan. She's a master of arts and business, still a work in progress on sports, Francine Akbar. And he's a dedicated aficionado of trivia, a no-nonsense guy who knows nonsense, Mr. Barry Nolan. And who's the captain today?
The con man.
Tony will be the captain. To my left, team two, his answers just seem to come in waves. It's his thinking that's hard to fathom. Arnie Reisman. She's the anchor of the team, the mainstay of the effort, playing with a full deck, Carolyn Faye Fox. And she applies stern discipline to the others, a woman who really knows her aft from her elbow, Miss Paula Lyons. All right, who is it this week?
I will be the captain.
Miss 52 Pickup over here.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Carolyn Faye Fox. That's what they called me in college.
Yeah, she drove a 52 Pickup.
Correct answers are worth 10 points, so whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate, we always advise new listeners to grab a pen and paper. Let's begin. Gitana Garofalo of Seattle, Washington, would like us to try her round of indigenous ingenuity. Please answer the following questions from Native Americana.
I'll bet she's Garofalo.
I thought so, but there's a Garofalo in my son's class.
Oh,
but your son is only 10.
But he still has class. I'm sorry, I have to apologize. Benjamin was supposed to be here, and I am sorry he is not here. I got an ah from that.
Yeah.
I am sorry. We'll bring him next time, I promise you. It's worth a look. I got to tell you this. I go into my dentist. I've been going to this guy 30 years. He's never seen my son. I pull out a picture of my son. He takes one look at the picture and he goes, "Oh, my God, your wife must be gorgeous." What, am I not in the room? What is... I don't even know where we are anymore. Please answer the following questions from Native Americana. Okay. Carolyn, what was wampum?
Money.
No.
It was shells.
Yes, can you be any more specific?
Used as money.
It really wasn't.
Used to trade?
This is what I found out that was interesting. It was not used as money, but it was very highly prized.
It was used as jewelry.
Yes. Can you imagine why?
Well, no. I mean, it was must have been both malleable, but we have a lot of it on Martha's Vineyard, and it's the inside of mostly the mussel shells. The purple striations are so pretty.
Mm-hmm. Right, the mother
and they
of
turn
pearl.
Them into beads. And
You know what? I'm going to give you the 10 points because it is mussel. Yeah, it's mussel shells and quahog shells, particularly. Does anyone know...
Is it used to establish rank and esteem?
Yes. Very good, Barry. In many tribes, that was the case. And also, it was to record important agreements or significant events. So if you participated in a specific event, you got to wear this. But I always thought it was money, and it is not. It wasn't used as that, but it was very highly prized and given as special value.
All right.
Try this one, Tony. Mm-hmm. Why do residents of both New York and San Francisco owe much to the Mohawk Nation?
Well, they kept them apart.
Wonder how that answer would play in New York. I'm just curious.
I don't know. I don't understand it.
Yeah.
So, you know. Residents of New York and San Francisco.
Yes.
Would, by any chance, did their native nation encompass both areas, or did they know the best route to Carmel?
Does it have anything to do with harbor and seagoing?
No, it does not. It has more to do with iconic landmarks.
Iconic landmarks.
Yeah, what do you think of when you think of New York and San Francisco?
Bridges.
Well, certainly out here, there's a bridge that comes to mind.
Yes.
The Tallahatchie Bridge.
Yes, I'm sure.
The Mohawk are involved in high altitude steel
structures.
Oh, that's right. Of course.
They did the
big deal work on the structural steel of the bridges of New York and San Francisco.
Well, actually, the Empire State and the Golden Gate Bridge, but yes, sir, that's exactly right.
Yes.
I'm afraid of heights.
They were first hired as the steel workers in 1886 and went on to build many skyscrapers, actually, but particularly the Empire State and the Golden Gate Bridge. We owe much to the Mohawk Nation in our nation today. Try this one, Arnie, and I loved finding out about this. What is generally thought to be the greatest contribution of Hiawatha?
The greatest contribution of Hiawatha is he never met Longfellow.
Yeah, that's true.
The greatest contribution of Hiawatha.
What's the greatest contribution of Hiawatha, Hiawatha?
What is that? What's that meter of that poem? What's the meter of that poem?
Oh.
Drone.
By the banks of Gitchigumi.
By the shores of Gitchigumi.
Is that a trochee? No, it's the opposite of an I am.
Da-da-dum.
Yes. I think that's a trochee.
It's Tomanic hexameter.
Tomanic hexameter. Ladies and gentlemen, Tomanic.
It makes you sick.
Yeah.
Right. You have to take Dramamine to do it.
Yeah.
The greatest contribution
of Hiawatha.
Do you have any idea?
I don't know. Did Hiawatha teach them how to eat something that was native to the land?
Lobsters.
Tomatoes.
Oysters.
No. Nothing to do with eating.
Nothing to do with eating.
But was it teaching a lesson in something?
Hiawatha was actually quite an important figure in Native American history. And I could compare him with someone in our history, actually.
Okay.
Okay.
But I'm going to let you do that.
You are, you?
Yeah.
Not in this lifetime.
Yeah.
Or this program, actually.
Was he the keeper of their language? Was he responsible for written language?
No, he...
Or contracts or things
no,
like
but,
that?
No, but the person I would most compare him with, I think, is George Washington.
No kidding.
In a
he
way.
Had wooden teeth.
He had wooden teeth. Did not have wooden
no.
teeth.
Actually,
he led his troops against...
He slept everywhere.
He slept everywhere. I think I'm going to put an end to this.
I think you will.
No, he crossed a river.
Right.
He
with
did,
what?
He probably did, but does anyone... yeah.
He could not tell a lie.
He right. could not tell a lie,
He chopped
I'm sure.
down cherry trees.
The what father was, of his
he
nation.
He chopped down cherry trees.
No,
was he his nation's father?
Yes, he really
was. He was the father and, of
I
his
said
nation.
That. You didn't hear me amid
oh,
the giggles.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. He really was. I'm going to give you 5 points for the struggle. He,
whatever.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He unified the Iroquois Confederacy, also uh-huh. the five nations. The Cayuga, the Mohawk, the Oneida, the Onondaga, and the Seneca, and then later, of course, the Tuscarora. But his
oh yeah,
he was
on the Talladega Nights. Here we go.
He was responsible for the great confederation that ruled the East for a long, long period
right.
of time.
Right.
Try this one, Francine. Who were the three sisters of Iroquois legend?
Magda, Ava, and Jaja.
No. Stop. You know, that's playing to a smaller house every year. You know that.
Oh, yes.
No clue.
Would Pocahontas be involved?
No. This is not a
the
who.
The three sisters, there's a star formation. Yes. Is there
we're
any connection that, between the star formation?
No,
we're
it's not.
The Iroquois.
Is yeah, this
right?
is not about a who. This is about a what. The three
oh.
sisters of Iroquois legend.
And
okay. Oh,
I think
are they
it.
Rivers?
They are not. Oh, good guess,
oh,
though. We're all going to learn a little something. This is great.
Well, it'll be fun to find out. Why don't you tell us?
Yes.
Audience, don't say it out loud. Do you know?
Yes. Of course they do.
Would it be
why is it nobody in the front knows? It's only the people in the back that know.
The three sisters.
Audience, help them out.
Tell us.
Beans, corn, and squash.
Ah,
the three gifts from the mother, from
right.
our mother, and that Series. Was the three sisters of Iroquois legend that made life possible and bearable, I guess. Corn, beans, and squash are the three sisters.
Okay.
Creation legend, right?
Beans,
okay.
corn,
squash.
All right?
Yep.
And try this one, Paula, and I'm going to help you out with this. What is a travois? T-R-A-V-O-I-S. Travois. And I will give you the hint. Think of an isosceles triangle.
Mm-hmm. Teepee.
I believe I just drew one.
Wigwam.
It is not. Not a teepee.
Is it a hammock?
Boy, how do you answer that? In a way.
How do you answer right? that? There's a yes and there's a no.
No, there's a...
The language is not that difficult.
I know.
Contrary to popular opinion.
I'm at
Barry
a loss for words.
Barry has shared a graphic interpretation.
Let me just see what Barry has drawn here. Pardon me. It's exactly right, yes.
Is it a hammock, no. Richard?
It is not exactly a
is
hammock.
Is it okay. woven?
Part of it. Is,
part of it is woven.
Yes, but
is
most
it,
of...
Is it hair?
It is not.
Oh.
Is
a
it
travois.
Is it a place to sleep?
I guarantee you've seen this.
Yes.
You've seen a travois.
Is it a place to sleep?
No,
it
not
is
really.
What you carry your baby in?
Oh.
No. Oh, what a great guess. That's not it. The isosceles triangle I thought would help because that's how it's constructed. There's a lot of mathematics actually involved in this. Any help from the other side?
A travois, think of as a stretcher. And a travois was something that you carried a lot of stuff on.
Yes.
You put it on the
on
stretcher.
The back of your
you
horse.
Held two handles, and the other two, the other end dragged on the ground.
Right.
And you could carry it behind a horse or behind people.
That's true.
Right.
But actually, the pointed end was forward and the wide end backward.
Yeah.
And that was the mathematics of how they did this. And you would think, well, why couldn't you cart people out, you know, using wheels and that kind of thing? Well, think of the terrain that they were on to begin yeah. with, mm-hmm. and round objects might have been hard to find to begin with. So the Native Americans developed this and used the isosceles triangle because of the mechanical advantage that it gave them.
So it's the dragon wagon.
It is the dragon wagon.
Cool.
And Barry, try this one. What might Chinook jargon have been? Chinook jargon.
Oh, it's when the salmon speaks.
Yeah. Well, Chinook is the salmon that was a huge food supply for the Indians of the Northwest.
Yeah.
And
strangely enough, that's not actually where this comes from. Well, part of it comes from there, but not really.
And the other thing that the Indians used Chinook for was the helicopter.
The helicopter.
The Chinook helicopter, right.
Is there a particular phrase you're looking for?
There is a Chinook. There is a Chinook wind, that's true.
And when the wind blew the salmon on the plane.
Oh, cut it out.
Came sweeping across the salmon.
Why would there have been such a thing as Chinook jargon?
Because one of the things, when Chinook are dying, they do that weird thing without producing any sound.
I am so glad that the radio audience couldn't see that. I don't know what to say. Why would there have been a need for Chinook jargon? And where would that have come from?
So the Chinook can't understand what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, from one Chinook to another,
yeah,
that's...
right. No, I mean, so that the fish wouldn't know what you were saying.
Is it a language of trade?
It is exactly a language of trade. Should I give her the 10 points
for
that?
Yeah, what the hell?
10 points for that. Very good. It is a mixture of English, French, and several Indian languages, including Chinook and many others, and Salish. Salish, I think, is the Northwest, right by Vancouver and Island and that thing. And it was used because no one could speak anyone else's language. You had the Russian fur traders, the English, the French, and the Indian nations. So they developed one basic language of trade so that they could trade among each other. And that was Chinook jargon. So very good. I think we learned a little something. And I want to thank Shatana Garofalo, or Garofalo, of Seattle, Washington. Thank you very much, Shatana. That was very nice. And let's go on to round two, which is played with a little musical help from our friends, the Real Vocal String Quartet. It's the first of the Says You Bluffing rounds. Carolyn, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one has the actual definition. The other two have cards that say, please bluff. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot, good enough to fool Tony's team. 10 points are up for grabs to Tony, if he can locate the truth teller, or to you, Carolyn, if he can't. In a few seconds to come up with a definition for the word Klishpen. C-L-I-S-H-P-E-N. Klishpen.
Really drunk and trying to do your laundry or something. Give me that. Klishpen.
Ladies? Says You's caravan of cajolery stops next in Hartford, Connecticut, Friday night, October 12th, for a live performance at the University of Hartford. Then the next weekend, Saturday, October 20th, it's on to the Dairy State for some constant badgering at the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. In November, we invade Syracuse, New York for our salute to the Salt City, November 16th and 17th. And finally, on December 30th, we're back in Boston to end the year, and if legend is correct, all of history, with the performance we call In the Great Mayan Bay. Tickets, information, and details are available at saysyou.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U, where if you follow that Join the Fun link, we'll show you how to join the fun. So remember, that's Hartford and Milwaukee in October, Syracuse in November, and Boston in December. It's the fall season of live performances of Says You.
Says You returns after this from home. You can hear Says You Again for free on any of the stations that stream our show. Just follow the High Definitions radio stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen again and again. For copies of this show or any other in our history, you can find downloads at SaysYou.net. Just follow that show downloads link and find high quality copies available. San Francisco's own real vocal string quartet. That's Irene Sazer on the violin, Kate Stenberg on the violin, Dina Maccabee on the viola, and Jessica Ivry on the cello. Thanks, ladies. We have had a few moments with the word klishpen. We will go first to Carolyn Fay Fox.
Klishpen. It's what you get when your Sharpe chews up your Sharpie. No. Klishpen comes to us from the world of linguistics. A klishpen is a loud, conflictual, is that a word? Dialogue that ends suddenly.
Loud, conflicting
when a
dialogue.
Foot is inserted in a mouth.
Something like that.
And chopped.
That ends abruptly.
Yes.
Just ends abruptly. A loud, conflicting dialogue that just ends abruptly is a klishpen. It could be, or Arnie, it could be something else.
Well, I think we're going back to Native American lingo as a theme, possibly, that this seems to be a pioneer implement used to brand cattle by the first Dutch settlers here in this country.
A Dutch cattle brand
is
what it is.
Yeah.
A cattle identification system is what we're talking
Dutch
about
brand.
Here. A klishpen.
Not to be taken to school.
Or Paula, something else.
Well, klishpen is actually a verb. And it means, it's something you do, I do a lot with bags of ice. I drop them on the ground when I want them to break up, you know, and that's what klishpen is. It means to break something by dropping it.
To klishpen it, to break something.
By dropping it.
By dropping it.
Mm-hmm.
You drop it down, boom,
you
klishpen that puppy.
Yep.
Okay.
You klishpen the puppy.
Jeez.
And that's what it could be. It could be.
Yes.
Could be to break something by dropping it. It could be the Dutch cattle branding implement, or it could be that loud, conflicting dialogue that ends abruptly. It's one of those three, believe it or not. And the choice, Tony, is yours.
Gosh, I think for the first time in the history of this show, all three members of the other side went to Saturn at the same time. There's not a single, I mean, linguistic, a loud, if you said conflictual, and that's part of the definition, then that's not a word, so makes me wonder. But a loud conflictual dialogue.
Could have been a fake.
A fake for what?
That word conflictual. But go on.
A klishpen. They were involved. Linguistics tends to be involved in like a tiny little things, fricatives and phonemes and metamorphs. And metamucil.
Metamucil?
So, somehow I don't think so. I don't think so. And I could be wrong, but Breaking, dropping the verb to klishpin something. Klishpin that. You klishpined my knee. You klishpined your promise to me. I think a Dutch brand. Also, for the main reason that I can just see Richard seeing something that said Dutch brand in a dictionary and saying, oh, I want to use that word. This is about as far as the thought process goes. This I don't know, guys. You got any conflictual opinions?
I think we're close to rolling over and letting you take charge.
Yeah.
Once again, the soft underbelly of Khan brings the team down to the bottom.
It doesn't seem to speak of any nationality or roots or common sense. It's sort of like a bad orphan, so...
Oh, so we're going to go with Dutch brand, a Dutch brand.
They're going to go with the Dutch brand.
Yes.
Arnie, they have come to the conclusion that the klishpen is a Dutch branding implement. Is that, in fact, what it is?
Well, this says basically klishpen, please fake a definition, so...
As you did.
Yeah.
Okay, audience, what do you think? It's not the Dutch branding implement, sir. I can assure you.
Okay, it's the Dutch branding. Okay, let me go back. Deja vu.
How many think it's the loud, conflicting argument? Huh? How many think it's to break something by dropping it? Oh. Yeah, I think...
Carolyn.
I think after all that, the loud, conflicting dialogue that ends abruptly... is what they've come up with, Carolyn. Is that, in fact, what a klishpen is?
Klishpen, please fake a definition.
It is not. Because the real definition
to
actually
drop
reads,
out a puppy.
Oh.
Klishpen, to break something by dropping it.
That is what it is.
Where do you find
10 points
words?
For Carolyn's team.
What language is that?
Who knows?
I don't know, actually.
Dutch Farsi.
Dutch Farsi.
Who needs a word for it?
It's
that was my other
schnook.
Question.
Schnook.
Yeah.
Right. A variation of schnook.
North Moluccan.
Let's go on to round three. We're just going to take a short little period of time here, a quick category to bring you guys into the 21st century.
Ah.
It's
Ooh.
A category called slanguage.
Oh, slanguage.
For 10 points, please tell me what might be meant by the following terms from current high school slang.
Oh, no. Yes.
Carolyn, sure. We need you.
Oh, yeah.
The scorekeepers will know.
Scorekeepers.
They will know.
This gives me a chance to introduce the scorekeepers. That's Max Carlisle and Michelle Dudley. I hope you guys... I hope you guys will chip in if we need your help here. Carolyn,
yes.
What might be meant by totes? T-O-T-E-S.
T-O-T-E-S. Totes?
Totes.
And they don't mean those galoshes that go over your shoes.
Nope.
It's those bags you get from NPR.
It's when you've really done something stupid. You're totes, man.
Totes.
Totes. Oh, yeah, totes.
Would that
your
be totes. Anything that you're dragging around, your backpack, your accoutrement?
No, it's nothing whatsoever to do
Does
with
it
that.
It has nothing to do with toting, right?
Yeah, it has nothing whatsoever to do with toting things.
All right.
Totes.
Totes.
Totes. I think the scorekeepers might have an inkling.
Is it short for the totality of something?
It's... What? That's pretty close, don't you think?
Uh-huh.
I'm going to give it to you.
Yeah,
10
good.
Points.
That's total.
Totally.
Yeah. Totally.
Totes is... Totally.
Oh,
totally.
Wow. All right.
Totes.
I love it.
You're gonna go to that party? Totes.
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 I love it.
Right. Wow, man.
Hey.
Try this one, Tony. We're bringing Tony up to date. This will be good. Come on, Tony. Try this one. What might be meant by EVS?
EVS?
EVS. EVS.
EVS.
EV.
Well, it's plural, right?
You know, EVS.
How many EVS are you kind of like putting out on this one?
Yes.
EVS.
No, the scorekeepers are not.
Like forever? Best friends forever?
Oh, best friends forever. Oh, yeah.
For Evs.
Ever yours, Evs?
Well, you're close. It's not best friends forever. It's not that, but
eventually,
you're close.
Are you going to do that, Evs?
No, I didn't.
If ever's in there. Something.
Ever is absolutely in there.
So take it, Tony.
Ever. What can you add to ever? Never? Ever.
All right, I'm going to go to the scorekeepers with one voice. Tell us.
What ifs.
Whatever.
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 Oh.
I think lingo is evolving them, a little too quickly for us.
Yeah, give them 7 points. They got the ever part, and give them 7 points for being good sports.
These kids are in such a hurry. Why are they short?
I don't know.
And so quickly.
All right, Arnie, you think you're so smart? Try this one.
I'm not after that.
What might be meant by frills?
Freel? Spell it.
F-R-E-A-L-Z. Frills.
For real.
For real.
For real. For real. Is exactly. Oh, man, she got it. 10 points for that.
That came from our 50-year-old teenager, right?
Yeah, there you go. All right. What might be meant, Francine, by deets?
The details.
The details are just smoking now.
They're smoking now, man.
D-E-E-T-S. I didn't even get a chance to spell it. The deets.
My elderly husband says that.
Oh, is that right?
Give me the deets.
All right.
But he does work with young medical students. Maybe that's where he picked it up.
I imagine so.
Give me the deets.
All right, try this one, Paula. What might be meant by geels? J-E-E-L-Z, geels.
As in congeals?
No.
Too big a word.
Geels.
J-E-E-L-Z.
Yep.
Geels.
Little cubes of Jell-O.
Small little geels.
Right. Without the melon ball. In the
I wish they wouldn't serve that in the cafeteria. The geels is not...
Add some geels, man.
The geels.
I think Max and...
Geels.
Michelle... So it has nothing to do with G's. It's geels.
Geels,
okay, geels. No clue.
Jail?
No.
Geels.
First, I'll go to the other side. Any thoughts, you guys?
Geels.
Yeah, we're jealous. Out of it.
I'm sorry?
We're out of it. That's our thought.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, dude, could it be?
No.
I believe that the stress is on the first syllable. Dude. Would it have anything to do with jealousy?
Yeah. Oh, jealousy. I'm sorry. No, it's not your question. Jealous. It has everything to do with jealousy. It's jealousy. Jealous.
Jealous.
Jills is jealous.
That's, wow.
No points for
are
that.
Are these all text? Is this text language?
A lot of it is text language, but they say it all the time.
They say it all the time.
All right, and finally, Barry, what might be meant by sick and sad?
Sick and sad.
Sick and sad means great or something.
Doesn't mean sick and sad.
What does it mean?
If something is sick, that means it's really great.
Yep. Yeah.
So sick and sad means it's great
totally
and
great.
Fabulous.
It is something you could put on a horse.
Okay. 10 points. Yeah, that's fine. Anybody know sick and sad?
Was it mean like terrific? Like the double positive?
Yeah, unparalleled and top-notch.
Top-notch.
Yeah.
Sick and sad. Non-parallel.
Yep.
Where does the sad come from?
That's the sad is top-notch, is sick and sad.
Sick
means
like
great, sad is unparalleled.
Yeah. Yikes.
Top-notch and unparalleled.
Sick and sad. I think I stopped at BFF.
Well, we've just updated your vocabulary. So thanks for playing that round, you guys. And let's go on to round four.
Get real.
Which is Tony's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word, two will bluff. 10 points, Carolyn, if your team can find the rose amid thorns.
Oh, my gosh, it looks Welsh.
Take a few seconds to come up with a definition for the word Huel. H-W-Y-L. Huel.
Cut it out.
It's what you put in your automobile.
Folks?
It's been disemboweled.
Oh.
Just a quick reminder, Says You performs live this fall on Friday, October 12th in Hartford, Connecticut, on Saturday, October 20th in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, November 16th and 17th in Syracuse, New York, and December 30th at Regis College in Weston, Massachusetts.
Allons à la fête, mais pour changer ta nom, on va t'appeler madame, madame canaille comme moi. Petit tu mignon, pour faire ta criminel, comme tu trouves moi, pour faire mes mois ta soeur.
Tickets, information, and details for all Says You performances are available at SaysYou.net. That's SaysYou. And we hope you can join us this fall for a live performance of Says You. We'll be right back. Says You coming to our town? Where can I find old shows? Who played that music I heard last week? So many questions, all answered on our website at SaysYou.net. There you can find tickets to tapings, Dally on the Daily Dispatch, or access our complete archive. You can contribute a question to the show and absorb ridicule on a national scale. This and more at SaysYou.net. That's SaysYou.
That was the Real Vocal String Quartet. You can find out more about any of the performers on our show by going to our website, going to the Frequently Asked Questions page, find out who played that music I heard last week. And I hope you will go find out a little bit more about the Real Vocal String Quartet. Thanks so much, ladies. We have had a few moments with the word Huel. We will go first to Tony Khan.
I hate to disagree with you, Richard, but it's actually pronounced Huel.
Huel, okay.
Huel, and I was, first I actually came in contact with this word as part of a very, very, very long name of a Welsh town called Huel Chlan Chwede something 16 other syllables, go, go, go.
Right.
And In Welsh, I think it means pond by the railroad station on a small sign going by so fast you can't make sense of it. But you wouldn't want to stop here anyway.
That's
so it is the Welsh for pond.
The Welsh word
for pond.
For pond.
Well, I guess, you know, you could also use it if you are in Wales and you step into a quill.
Yeah.
You know, they know what you're talking about.
That's science. It could be that. Or Francine, something else.
Well, Tony's right that it is Welsh, but he is not right about his definition.
Oh.
You might not have thought that Allen Ginsberg, the poet, was so Welsh.
Oh, the original title of Howl?
Yeah, that's true.
But his famed work, Howl, is a variant of this word, chwil, which means a great emotional outburst.
A great emotional outburst is a chwil.
To chwil with you.
Which is not like to quell, it is to chwil.
Okay. It could be that, too. Or, Barry, a third alternative.
Huel is a cheesy porridge. You may recall from the great play, How Green Was My Valley, the young Welsh male was being taught about the finer things in life, and one of his first lessons was, only a fool hurls his huel.
Of course. I remember that.
Of course you do. First act.
First act.
Cheesy.
In the first
porridge.
Act, you hear about that cheesy porridge, the huel. It's either that or a great emotional outburst or a pond. Either way, it's coming from Wales, I would imagine. And the choice, Carolyn, is yours.
Did you hear Carolyn say it was disemboweled?
No.
Disemboweled, yes.
No, fortunately,
one of her better
I didn't.
Lines.
Well.
Yes.
This is a difficult one. They're all Welsh.
It sure looks Welsh.
There's nothing English here. Cheesy
no.
porridge, I think Barry was thinking about gruel.
Probably. And howl, I don't think this has anything to do with emotional outburst, but who the devil knows?
It sounds like an emotional outburst.
Could be. I'm beginning to like pond.
You are?
I am, too. I'm just ready to go for the simple thing.
Huel scum.
Huel scum?
Haven't you heard of huel scum?
I think it might be Francine this time around.
Oh, really?
Well, because she had time to add to the definition.
You know, when I first envisioned this game, I saw it as an intellectual exercise.
Then why would you use huel?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, unless it means that, you know, you play with your face. Because it's actually an acronym for how would you look, you know.
Yeah. That one. What he said, right. What he said.
But I digress.
Well, earlier you called it.
Well, if you both think that it's pond, I'm willing to go with that.
You're the captain.
I know I'm the captain.
You're the captain.
You can do whatever you want.
Okay, then I'll go with Francine, the great emotional outburst.
Okay,
there you
then.
Go.
Francine, the captain, has stepped up boldly.
Boldly.
And made the choice.
Boldly
she says that
no
a huel is a great emotional outburst. Is that, in fact, what it is?
Huel. An emotional outburst.
Very good.
That's exactly what it is.
Excellent, Carolyn. Go, go, Carolyn.
10 points for Carolyn's team. Let's go on to round 5. Let's close tonight. Here's a category we called exit, followed by a bear.
What?
That phrase,
oh, that phrase
is a stage direction from A Winter's Tale.
It's exactly. I cannot believe you knew that. Is exactly right. Is a stage direction from The Winter's Tale, from Shakespeare's Winter's Tale. We'll give you a telling stage direction from some major works.
Oh, okay.
You tell us the play and the author.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Hints are available, but they will cost.
Yeah, okay.
Try this one, Carolyn.
Okay.
A ruined chapel by moonlight. Aisles divided by pillars and arches. Ruined Gothic windows at back. Major General Stanley, discovered seated pensively, is surrounded by his daughters.
Are his daughters beans, corn, and squash?
Well done.
I don't know. Not to my recollection, right. No.
Team?
Know. Regan, Cordelia. No, let's see. Major General Stanley.
Major General Stanley.
Yeah. Not ringing any ding-dong.
Not ringing a bell. Oh.
Major Barbara.
Major Barbara. That
and
is
are these
not
are these plays or movies or
these are plays.
Plays.
These are plays.
These are plays
because it's stage direction.
Some
I think we'll need a hint.
Play that starts in a ruined church.
Yep.
Starts.
Gothic
maybe it ends.
At the back.
No, he said the scene.
Major
opens.
General Stanley discovered seated pensively, surrounded by his daughters.
I can't think of a single play with
I
a major.
I can give
General
you a
Dan.
Clue. It'll cost you a lot, though.
How much?
Well, otherwise you got dead air. Richard.
Otherwise you got dead air. Well, I think you got to concentrate on the Major General more than anything.
Okay, the Major General.
Is this a Gilbert and Sullivan?
It sure is.
Oh.
All right. Pirates of Penzance.
No. Yeah, it's the Pirates of Penzance. That's right. What it is. Major. We gave you a real big hint for that, so you got to give her 4 points for that.
Okay.
That's a pretty big hint to get that done. Try this one, Tony. Stage direction. They do not move. Curtain.
Oh. Oh, well, come on.
That's got to be Beckett.
Yeah. It's got to be Beckett. Yeah,
and it's Oops. Called Sorry I Couldn't Write a Play.
Almost, yes.
Waiting for
yes.
Is it Waiting for Godot?
It's yeah. Waiting for Godot. That's
really?
Right. 10 points. Very good. All right, I'm going to keep them hard, see if we can get this done.
That was not hard.
Try this one, Arnie. He heaves the package at her. She cries out in protest but manages to catch it. Then she laughs breathlessly. Her husband and his companion have already started back around the corner.
He heaves a package at her.
Oh, he heaves the package at her. Then she laughs breathlessly. Her husband and his companion have already started back around the corner.
Her husband leaves.
Oh. I'm
not ringing any bells.
I don't know.
No.
Is it Tennessee Williams?
It is, in fact.
Oh, wow.
Wow, Carolyn.
Wow. Very good, Carolyn. Go the rest of the way. Get going.
I don't think there's a more surprised person in the building.
Right.
You want to give it a shot?
Yeah, try that.
Glass Menagerie?
It is not the Glass Menagerie.
Oh.
No.
Well, then.
Heaves a package. Cat on a hot tin. No. Rose Tattoo.
I'm sorry?
Rose Tattoo.
It is not.
Okay.
It's the more obvious, of course.
Streetcar.
It's from Streetcar.
There's a package in Streetcar?
Streetcar named FedEx.
Desire.
A Streetcar named FedEx is what it is.
That's it.
They take away Blanche.
You did get Tennessee Williams. You did get close there. Give them 5 points for that. I think that's fair. Try this one, Francine. He opens his umbrella and dashes off strandwards. But comes into a collision with a flower girl who is hurrying in for shelter.
Oh, oh. My Fair Lady.
Well,
Pygmalion.
By?
George Bernard
George
Shaw.
George Bernard Shaw. He's exactly right. 10 points. These last two are really hard, so.
Oh,
you're
I want
have to
one like that
it.
Last one.
Well, you know. Unfortunately, you're not going to get it. You're going to get this one instead. Morning room in Algernon's flat in Half Moon Street. The room is luxuriously and artistically furnished. The sound of a piano is heard in the adjoining room.
It's not...
It's not flowers for
Algernon. Not flowers
well,
for Algernon.
Either Tony knows the answer or is there a doctor in the house? I'm just...
I'm administering CPR to myself.
I guess.
Tony is fine and correct.
He is correct. Boy, this side knows
it's not
this.
Flowers for Algernon, obviously.
It is not, no.
So,
it's not
Half Moon Street.
Gaslight?
No. Oh, that's a great guess, though.
Isn't Half Moon Street in New Orleans?
Oscar Wilde.
Is exactly
right. Oh, The Importance of Being Earnest.
The Importance of Being Earnest.
All right.
Good job.
Half Moon Street, yeah.
10 points. And finally, Barry, don't worry about a thing. Nothing resting on this but the whole game. Synesius, C-I-N-E-S-I-A-S, enters in obvious and extreme sexual excitement. A slave follows him carrying an infant.
this one more time.
Oh, I was afraid of that. Synesius enters in obvious and extreme sexual excitement. A slave follows him, carrying an infant.
Enters in obvious sexual excitement?
Yeah.
Should we go for one of the biggies, one of the Greek biggies? You know,
one of the Greek
Euripides.
Biggies? I don't believe they had much in the way of...
Orestes.
I don't believe they had a lot of stage directions like this.
I know, but I think you'd listen to Tony.
I should listen to Tony, though, in this case.
I think you should listen to Tony.
Who are that? You can know.
So Synesius is one of the main characters in
Is it Euripides? No.
It is not Euripides, no. Oh.
Aristophanes.
Aristophanes
so
is correct.
This would be the birds.
It is not.
The clouds?
No.
But these are
flies.
No.
No. The flying birds.
I thought that the excitement angle would help you out with this.
Yeah. I give up.
Oh, I think they're not going to get it. I'm going to go to the other side.
Is it Lysistrata?
It is the Lysistrata. Oh! Yes, Lysistrata is what it is. I don't know. There was such a struggle. They got Aristophanes. I'm going to give him 7 undeserved points for that.
I should have known that. About the Lysistrata.
7 undeserved points, which means that today's contest ends in a 74-74 tie. Congratulations to both teams. Oh, boy.
Losing both recognition rounds. That's miraculous.
I'll hear about this all the way back to Boston, believe me. That is all we have time for this week. Thanks so much to Lenore Naxon, Geese Graphics, and all the folks here at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Also to Joanne Wallace, Robin Smith, and everybody at KQED-FM for your long help and friendship. Sharon Salkind are the writers. Antonio Oliart mans the meters. And Zach Moore is our associate producer and webmaster. And once every few weeks, we get to remind you that this show is best when we get your questions, when we get your comments, and most of all, when you show up. Thank you, San Francisco, for showing up. See you next week. Support for SizU in San Francisco comes from the Intercontinental Hotels, the Intercontinental Mark Hopkins, and the Intercontinental San Francisco, our home away from home on the Bay and on the web at intercontinentalsanfrancisco.com. Benjamin, give him the skinny.
SizU. Created and produced by Pippin and Finch, Boston.
No cell in your 100 billion cells in your brain...
Is it in a neuron?
...is having a thought.
If you took your neuron out and lay it on the table, could you see the bit of the thought that's in that neuron?
But together they are.
No, it's not in the neuron.
Together they're falling in love or wanting to write music. So who's in there?
This week on Radiolab, we look at the leaderless logic of ants, cities, Google, even your own brain.
Who's sitting inside the head of the person sitting inside my head?
Sunday nights at 8 o'clock.
Celebrating 50 years of community service and community support, this is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 10 o'clock.